Welcome to The Upward Spiral, a music business podcast presented by Hypebot.com. Today on the podcast, we are talking to Daniel Savage, who leads North American operations for the UK-based startup Music Metric, which offers behavioral data for the music industry. Earlier in his career, he also served as the general manager of Maverick Records, which was co-founded by Madonna in 1992. We are going to talk to Savage about the Iron Maiden story that recently made headlines around the web, as well as what role data plays in helping artists make informed decisions such as where they tour. I am Kyle Berlin, a user researcher and technology writer at Live Nation Labs, a web and mobile product development group at the company.
And I'm Courtney Harding. I develop and manage partnerships for Sounddrop, a social music application for Spotify, web, iOS, and Android devices.
As I said at the top of the show, we are joined by Daniel Savage.
Greetings.
Thank you for coming on the show, Dan. So, days before Christmas break, a news story about Iron Maiden using torrent data to plan its South American tour went viral and gained tons of coverage in places like Rolling Stone and Billboard.biz. The trouble is, as we found out in the following days, is that Siteworld got the details of the story wrong. As far as we know, Iron Maiden never used torrent data to plan their tour dates. They never tried to be innovative and leverage technology to perform in front of their biggest music pirates, as Siteworld previously reported. They never collaborated or partnered with Music Metric for this fictional effort. A recent story in The Guardian said this whole scenario could happen, but it didn't actually happen. So Dan, I suppose a great question to start with is, do we have the details correct? How did this story unfold in recent weeks?
Well, thanks, Kyle. Hi, Courtney. Essentially, this was just some very shoddy journalism, and it's ruined a small part of holiday break for many of us. I do have to give Hypebot credit in actually having the most accurate story about all of this after it all unfolded. And if for anyone that wants to really do a deep dive on what happened, the Hypebot post really does contain all the facts. I'll just go over it really briefly because, as I said, it really is bad journalism. So there's really not much skullduggery here to be unearthed. Basically, what happened was, at the end of last year, The Guardian, with whom Music Metric has done a number of things in the past and with whom we have a very good relationship, published an article about the biggest, fastest growing companies, UK companies, on a London Stock Exchange, from a London Stock Exchange report. And Iron Maiden showed up. Iron Maiden, it does have a corporate entity, and as they are a very popular brand slash band, they had a very successful year, and that's why they popped onto the list. They rang up our CEO, Greg Mead, and asked him for a quote about it. They also had already published some torrent data from Music Metric on Iron Maiden. And Greg took a look at the data and said, yeah, it does seem to correspond to the fact that they've done a lot of touring in South America and there's a lot of torrent activity in South America. So that's really interesting. And that's pretty much where we left it. And we never said, we never implied that that Iron Maiden had retained us to be strategic consultants. We never implied that we knew that Iron Maiden had used our information specifically. And then somehow a website named Siteworld, which up till then I had been blissfully unaware of, ran an article basically purporting that Iron Maiden had in fact specifically used torrent data provided by Music Metric to plan their touring, and which was, as far as we know, completely not true. As soon as we found out about it, we went to great lengths again on all of our holiday breaks to correct this misinformation. And the many of the outlets that had run the story originally, including TechCrunch and Rolling Stone and SiteWorld, by the way, put up stories that straightened out the record in this regard. And then, of course, Hypebot as well. And that's really all there is to it. And if anyone is wants further detail, you can come to the Music Metric website. We posted a blog post as well, in which we explain all this. And you know, that all the detail that exists is in that blog post.
So, Dan, I'd like to hear about the SiteWorld story. Went up on December 20th, and I think in the following days it started to go viral, getting picked up by a number of people. Your story on your blog didn't run until January 3rd. You know, I understand that this was the holiday and people are busy with their families, but that does seem like a considerable gap in a story that you guys knew wasn't accurate. What were the challenges in doing follow-up with those reporters and preparing yourself to put that blog post out into the public?
Well, you know, the challenges were exactly as you might imagine. It is the holiday time. Almost everybody was out of the office, not only on our side, but also, you know, our PR agency, and as well our, you know, the reporters with whom we were trying to make contact. And so we did the best we could. And it was obviously extremely frustrating to us because someone had basically made something up, or if you want to be more charitable, had done a very liberal interpolating of the facts to reach a certain conclusion, which turned out to be absolutely false. So obviously, when something like that happens, because of the wonderful nature of the web, it's just not as easy as issuing a retraction and everything comes down and everybody, you know, the record is corrected. So, you know, that's just one of the things that we deal with in this new world is that, you know, once something is on the web, unless you invent a time machine and correct it at the front end, it's very hard to set the record straight in cases like this. But we feel like we've more than gone out of our way to make it really clear what the real story is.
The other interesting thing about this story is that it's actually possible in every regard, right? Music Metric does have torrent data that I believe is geographically specific. And not even in theory, in practice, someone like Iron Maiden could partner with Music Metric to potentially target, you know, their biggest pirates, as the story implied. And it really did make this compelling storyline that, you know, I think a lot of people wanted to be true. With those things said, I'd love to hear your thoughts on why you think a story like this went viral so quickly.
Not sure I can really guess why it went so viral so quickly, but you are correct in that I think people's imaginations were captured by the idea of being able to use not just torrent data, because what we offer our customers is much more than just torrent data, but using all the data available via Music Metric in order to make smarter decisions about what they're doing and all of their marketing efforts, whether it's the content and timing of their social media or touring decisions or making decisions about various parts of their marketing plan and optimizing the ROI on the spend.
Yeah, so I kind of want to talk a little bit more about that because it, to me, once you sort of got past the big like pirates and Iron Maiden and you know these sort of buzzwords, like this seemed to be kind of a a non-story. I mean, it would totally stand to reason that a band would look at available data and use that to plan a tour so that they could get the most bang for their buck. Like, that to me seems just like such an incredibly obvious thing and like almost a non-story. So, like, why was this news other than the fact that maybe it was like some fuzzy names attached to it?
Well, I think part of it is that the live business in general is a wonderful and complex beast, in which decisions are made with a lot of different inputs, starting at one end where you have a band's agents trying to drive the highest price possible from a promoter. Then on the other side of the desk, you have the promoter trying to be as smart as they can about their buying decisions. Then you have practical considerations as far as routing. We just can't go from New York to Seattle to Ann Arbor to Pensacola to San Diego. Then that just doesn't make any sense for anybody. And so you have all these variables that go into it. And sometimes it is nice to have some science behind what you're doing. I mean, we've actually started to get a lot of traction in this in the live music space, where we have people who are in various parts of the live business, whether they're a promoter or a festival producer or a venue or an agent or a band's management, that are using all of our data to try to be smarter about their touring and to try to, figure out what, in the case of a festival producer promoter, like who's the right act to book. And in the case of an artist, where should I go play? Even if it's, sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it isn't. And, even the lower level, i.e., just, developing artists, level artists who by definition don't have torrent activity, they could look at the activity of artists that they feel like their audience is a good overlay to or to whom they aspire to be someday. So I think I'm the next Dave Matthews. Well, I'm going to go look at all of Dave Matthews' information and music metric, and I'm going to pull everything I can out of it, and I'm going to see how I can use that to learn something, because I should have the same type of audience. So therefore, how can I use all of the data available to me as a good roadmap for the future?
Well, I think to go back to your point about the festivals, I think the answer that every festival organizer has come up with for that first question is Outkast. And I don't know whether you guys were involved with that or not. But, what are some of the roadblocks that artists would have in terms of getting access to that data then? I mean, again, it seems like such an obvious thing for them to do, but, what are some practical considerations that would prevent them from using the data that you provide?
Well, there's no roadblocks. We're happy to have anyone that wants to subscribe can subscribe to the service. It's not there's no litmus test to becoming a subscriber. The Outkast thing that you mentioned is actually really funny, because I track a lot of things on my own, and I was tracking Coachella as if it were an artist. So I was tracking their socials, their Wikipedia views, their YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't even remember why, but I remember going in one day last year and looking, let's see how Coachella's doing. And I noticed that 2 days earlier that all of their data had just spiked like crazy, like 2 days earlier. And I had absolutely no idea why. And I Googled around, and I put one and one together and figured it out. Is like that was the day that the Outkast rumor first hit the web. And as soon as that hit, things went haywire. So it actually could be an interesting process for festival producers in the future, just to float out rumors of certain artists that they might have and see what the reaction is. No different than when a presidential candidate starts floating out rumors of potential vice presidents, and just to see what the press has to say. But I thought that was super interesting. And by the way, every time something like that happens, it warms my heart because it shows like, hey, this music metric thing we got going, it really works.
So, in terms of, and I don't know how much granular detail you can provide, but do you have a sense of how many artists are or bands are like using your data right now? How many are subscribing? Do you have any sort of anecdotal evidence with bands who reach out to you and say like, "Hey, we've used this data and we didn't maybe like they had an audience somewhere that they didn't even know they had an audience." It's the old Rodriguez story, right? He was huge in South
Right.
Africa, but no one knew. Do you hear stories like that?
We have so many customers that obviously it's just physically impossible to be in touch with every single one of them unless they proactively come to us, in which case we're always happy to talk to them. Generally speaking, just to back up a moment, we see our customers fall into four basic chunks. The first chunk being, for lack of a better term, the mainstream music company. So management, record labels, distributors, publishers and artists. The second chunk is the live business. So that's promoters, agents, festival producers, venue owners, venue operators, etc. The third chunk would be media properties, so radio, television, online properties. And the fourth chunk is brands and agencies. So we have a lot of customers spread out over a lot of different businesses. We do always have conversations with our customers where people will say, hey, I noticed this. What does this mean? Or, I did change something as a result of, what I saw. I mean, which again is always nice to hear. It's unfortunately with Iron Maiden, it wasn't true. But the scenario of a band using not just torrent information, but everything we have to offer to help plan a tour, is, definitely a reasonable thing to think might happen.
So we've been talking about the potential for using behavioral data to plan concert tours. I'd like to shift the conversation now to the potential of direct-to-fan marketing platforms being integrated into music streaming services. Artists could leverage the streaming data to target passionate listeners with relevant products, which could encourage them to become actual buyers. Rhapsody has recently partnered with Bandpage to market experiences to their fans. Spotify recently announced that they're selling merch without a fee. And of course, Beats Music, which is planned to launch very shortly, is rumored to have a partnership with Topspin as well. What are your thoughts on selling merchandise and concert tickets through streaming services using that behavioral data to target fans?
Well, look, anytime you can get that much closer to who the ultimate consumer is, that's always a huge win. In our service, we don't, we're not able to tell you specifically that Kyle, who lives in Los Angeles, is the person who did something, whether it was a stream or a YouTube play or what have you. I mean, we obviously aggregate data at different levels. So there are some things for which we have country level data. There are some things for which we have market level data. And so, you can use our service to detect activity and trends, not only for yourself, but for artists that you feel are competitors of yours. To see, if you're missing something, what are they doing right that we're not doing right? But we don't get down to, we track torrents, for example, down to the IP level, but we have no way of knowing. We know where they are, but we have no way of knowing who they are or any more information like that.
But the great hope of something like Beats Music is that they will know who the fan is specifically and their listening activity. They'll know which artists they're listening to most often, and they'll be able to target them directly with marketing messages, perhaps including a brand new t-shirt by Frightened Rabbit or concert tickets in the future. What do you think are the potentials for those developments? Do you think fans actually want to buy the t-shirt through the music streaming service or obtain the ticket that way?
I think, wherever you, generally speaking, wherever you have a captive audience, that's always going to be your best opportunity. No different than, we've seen a few different cases, and we've been consulting to labels on certain artists that we see, I'll look in and I'll say, wow, this is really obvious to me, that there seems to be a huge disconnect between the YouTube activity for this particular artist and the social following, whether it's Facebook or Twitter. So it seems to me that either the content on the YouTube channel is not compelling enough to make someone, fall over to the other side and become a fan, or just logistically, you have them at the YouTube page, but you haven't, done what you need to do, whether it's, a connecting link or whatever, to get them back over to the social network or get them to sign up or subscribe to the channel. So generally speaking, yeah, if you have them already, the ability to no matter where they are, I mean, whether they're on a streaming service or work at the other direction, they just bought a ticket. Now, would you like to stream the song, stream the new album now that you've bought the ticket? I mean, that's obviously, a marketer's dream. I've definitely I know that Beats is going to be very active in knowing data about their customers, in the same way that Netflix knows more about you than you know about you. They know, what's on your wish list when you watch a program. They know if you stop 25 seconds in, and they have gobs and gobs of data, which, among other things, they're using to making decisions about whether or not to green light production in the future. So, as I said, we don't have specific subscriber information, but on the other hand, we have a very robust API product with all the data that you have on our platform. So if there were a company that has that kind of subscriber data, if they wanted to pipe in our data and do a mashup of it and, use that to further their marketing efforts, that would be really exciting.
My understanding is that last year around this time, Music Metric announced that they had partnered with Spotify to make the data available in the Spotify dashboard. Oftentimes, these efforts are categorized as the streaming companies are trying to do outreach to artists and make their platforms, the potential of their platforms more accessible for artists so that they can truly see what their fans are doing in there and potentially, like Spotify has been doing now, making it so you can sell merchandise in the service. Do you think, Spotify's efforts, Beats Music efforts to make these partnerships that allow artists to realize the potential of these platforms will kind of calm down some of the anger and nervousness that you see percolating throughout the blogosphere?
I'm not sure that it will ever fully mitigate whatever misgivings some people might have about streaming services, just because, as it all comes back to Iron Maiden, doesn't it? There's such a great opportunity for misinformation out there that, the echo chamber is so vast that, there will always be some level of paranoia or antipathy towards, companies that people think might be taking advantage of artists. I totally give Spotify credit for being so proactive and trying to be transparent about their business model and everything that they've done to do that. And we talk to companies all the time and who have asked us to come in and help them kind of improve their systems so that their own customers can get a better sense of what's really going on in their business life. So I think they're doing as much as they possibly could as far as transparency. And it'll only be a matter of time to see if how successful they are. But it's definitely not for lack of trying.
So I want to talk about the downsides of a data-driven industry and maybe do a little devil's advocate stuff here. Now that there's so much data, do you think it's going to make record labels less likely to take risks? Because obviously these are profit-driven businesses. They want to do what works and what makes them the most money. So do you think all this data and the fact that they can sort of micro-target everything is going to lead to them taking fewer risks because they can tell sort of this is what people like and we'll just keep doing it.
That's an interesting question. I personally, I don't know if you remember a fantastic movie that maybe you'll see on a Saturday afternoon called The Thing with Two Heads, starring Raymond Land and Rosie Grier. I believe they're actually doing a remake of it. But, I've always been that guy with two heads. I am a trained musician. I've been in bands. I'm a songwriter. At the same time, I've always had, a very serious and successful business career in the music business. And so I come at it from both sides, and I can see both sides. So obviously, no amount of data is going to replace a brilliant song, obviously. And, I just think that I think it all works together in a certain way. I think that it's no different in a way than the process you describe about deciding whether or not to dive in and sign an artist, for example. Let's use the analogy of buying a stock. Okay, so when you decide to buy a stock, it's a guess. There's a lot of emotion in it. There's a lot of gut in it, right? But at the same time, you do have certain due diligence that you do. You want to see, all right, well, what's the stock trading at today? What's the 52-week high low? What's the PE? What are some companies that are in the same space and how they've been doing, et cetera, et cetera. So, and then you make your decision. But so now it's a gut decision, which is aided by having some facts at your disposal. So I think ultimately, great A&R people will still be great A&R people, and ultimately those decisions are made on gut. But they're decisions made on gut with the help of information. And maybe they wouldn't be aware of a certain brilliant artist unless somehow they flagged the fact that they had had some huge increase in one data point of sorts. They're also very aware that some of this data, people can buy YouTube comments, they can buy Twitter followers, et cetera, et cetera. We have certain ways that we screen out things like that and we take into account. And also, just on a practical level, there are a lot of times when I can be looking at an artist's data, and with a trained eye, I can see that something does not feel right to me. I don't think it's no different than, back in the day when the jukebox video network, when you could call a 900 number for 50 cents, have your video played. So, what did record companies do? They went in and they hired boiler rooms of people to call and have the song pushed up to the top of the playlist, and people were aware it's going on. And but you just have to. There's always going to be a certain degree of noise, and you just account for that. But so I don't think anyone would ever get to the point of just, and nor should they, just making A&R decisions based on data, but what they absolutely should be doing is helping making marketing decisions based on data. Like I said earlier, knowing, we did these five things. Four out of these five don't seem to have moved the needle at all. This fifth one seems to have. Now I'm going to compare myself to some of my competitors and let's see what they're doing and how do I match up against them. How am I doing, the first 8 weeks of my first single? How am I doing versus the first 8 weeks of the first single of a competitive artist? If I'm below the line, it's maybe a warning sign or maybe a time for a course correction. If I'm doing better than they were doing, then I'm more encouraged and maybe it's time to throw some more gas on the fire. We also have a series of industry benchmarks which we put together based on genre and based on the popularity of artists within that genre. So, for example, if a label were about to launch a top 10 alternative artist, they could pull up a benchmark for the average top 10 alternative artist and see where they live relative to that benchmark. Are we above the line? Are we below the line? And what do we do as a result?
What about in terms of touring? So you get back to chatting about that. I'm just wondering what happens if a band, looks at the touring data, plans their tour out accordingly, and they wind up skipping a bunch of markets. And then the fans that are in those markets figure this out. Is there going to be some sort of backlash? Like, when does it make sense to just go to a market anyway? Even if you look at the data and the data says there's 10 people there that care about you, does it ever make sense to just go, well, we'll play it anyway?
Look, I don't think anyone's suggesting that there would ever come a point where an artist would purely base touring decisions based on any of the data just by itself. I think there's so many other factors, including super practical things like, well, market B is in between market A and C. We might as well play there because it's on the way. There may be only 10 people there, but next time we come through, maybe there'll be 50 people, that kind of thing. And there are a number of other factors which go into it. So like I said earlier, I think it's just really, I think it would be a mistake in any case just to make decisions based on one particular subset of experience or data. I think you have, like, I'll go back to my stock picking analogy. You have to go back to all the available information you have and weight each piece of data in your own mind. It's how important you think each piece of data is, and then make your own decisions from there. And look, a lot of I've worked with more than my share of developing artists who lost a lot of money in the first 2 years of touring because they were playing places that they had never been before and nobody knew them. But you stick with it long enough and people like what you're doing, then ultimately it pays off. And 15 years later, even when you're not selling that many records, you still do a very healthy touring business and life is good.
How granular can you get with the data? And I'm thinking specifically now that there's so many little niche genres out there. If I'm like a progressive metal band, or if I'm, this very underground hip hop type of group, like if I'm a specific niche that's maybe not pop or rock or anything big, how granular can I get with the data? Can I look at like other progressive metal bands do well in this market type of data? Is that something that I can play with?
Well, yes, as far as the benchmarks are concerned, we have a lot of them, and they do get somewhat granular. And you just have to, depending on your genre, you'd have to look and see if that particular genre is something we have a benchmark for. But otherwise, one of the really great things about Music Metric is that when you become a subscriber, you automatically, it's all you can eat. You have access to all the artists that we track, which as of today is somewhere in the neighborhood of 700,000. So you can literally sit in front of your computer until you're tired of doing so and look at every single other band and all of their data and see how you're doing versus what they're doing and, you know, try to make informed decisions for yourself based on what they're doing. And if those are the people that really make up your market, I mean, if you want to, you know, if a bigger company wanted to get a little fancier, you know, there's a lot of custom things that we could do to, you know, if someone were to tell us here, like, here are 30 artists that we want you to group and create our own subset so we can look at that in totality. You know, that's obviously something we can do. It's not part of our off-the-shelf dashboard offering, but, you know, we have all the data, and it's just, you know, a question of, you know, tell me how you want to access it.
So we've been talking a lot about how data can be used by bands. I'd love to shift the conversation to how it can be used by brands. My understanding is that brands are increasingly becoming clients for data firms. They're looking for up-and-coming artists that align with their products who might consider doing a sponsorship deal. They want to become tastemakers themselves who are up on the latest music, and maybe a competitor already took the recent Lorde song and ran with it, or maybe a major artist is out of their budget and they're looking for someone comparable. Has Music Metric ever worked with brands to find artists for their campaigns?
We have done so, and again, it's not. It's going to be a combination of using our off-the-shelf tools plus some custom applications, and you know, so we talk to agencies, we talk to brands, and a lot of times, you know, the whole idea of matching brands with artists is a very interesting field in that. On the one hand, yes, you want to have some sort of reassurance via data that this multi-million dollar decision you're about to make is the right one to make. At the same time, there are practical applications. So if you're an agency that's pitching something to a brand, and you know the execution is going to fall in March of 2014, since this is what you do every day, day in, day out, day out, you have a pretty good sense of, once you have a spec from the brand, like, I'm looking for someone in this genre at this level, and this is when the execution falls out, etc. You do have a pretty good sense of who's available, and you know, so-and-so is out of album cycle, they're not going to do it. So-and-so is touring in China, they're not going to be able to do it in March. So let's imagine that you have, just by yourself, you've come up with 20 names. So you can use our tools to kind of run those 20 names through the system and figure out which ones will probably be the best decision. You can also work backwards. You can say, you know, here are the markets that I want to reach. I want to find people, I want to find artists that maybe no one's heard of yet, but are up and coming and seem to have a lot of upward velocity. Can you tell me a list of 20 of those people? And then we'll take those 20 and we'll run them through the system and see what pops out. And sometimes it's a case of, here are the markets we want, here's the genre, just come back to us with some names and tell us, and then we'll use them from there. So it's definitely doable, and you know, it's something that, like I said, and I think this is becoming a theme in this conversation, there's always going to be a combination of data, intuition, common sense, institutional memory as far as decisions you're making. And you know, we just feel like, generally speaking, as an industry, I think there is a bit of a data literacy gap in the music industry. And what we're trying to do is help fill that void, and just help people make better decisions and more cost-effective decisions in everything that they do.
I love to hear about, we started talking about this a little bit, right? Which is that, one day, hopefully, artists might be able to look at a platform and say, all right, here is the data on my fan base and what they're listening to. And then here's the data on the brands that my fans like via Facebook or whatever. Would they ever be able to pull that data together and then pitch a brand for a sponsorship or sync licensing deal themselves?
There's no reason why they wouldn't, beyond if they were asking for some kind of level of sophistication that required us doing custom work via our data science team, then they would just have to have the economic bandwidth to be able to do that. But there's no reason why not. I mean, it's a wonderful world now. I mean, if you're a band, if you're a big enough band with a big enough draw, as many bands have gone on to do, I mean, well, I don't really need a label, so I'll just do this myself. I'm my own company. So yes, is the lead singer the CMO? Sometimes, maybe, or maybe the manager's the CMO, but there's, like I said, there's no barrier. We're happy to have anyone that wants to subscribe to the service come on board. We're not, we don't discriminate. And as far as who you are, and our pricing is extremely affordable. So, we feel that everybody has access to the tools that they need.
Do you see a future when that possibility of artists viewing their data and seeing a correlation among brands becomes more of a turnkey solution that they will able to quickly look at and do themselves and maybe send an inquiry to?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely possible. I think the last step of that would be that they would have access to much deeper level demographic information, which we are getting to very quickly. But there's also going to be some things that we do have the ability to track brands and to start just drawing some conclusions, but that's not necessarily something we'd be able to do, a customer would be able to do by themselves at this point. So, theoretically, sure. Beyond a specific brand affiliation, I think what is much, very much possible in the near future is the more geo-targeting. As far as, if for whatever reason you're a band in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and are having trouble getting coverage in the local print media or radio play, what have you, the ability for you to dig into your data and see that, you know what, your station plays rock music. We're the third fastest rising new rock band in Green Bay, or what have you, and to start using some of that information to make compelling arguments versus, what might have happened a few years ago, like, well, we just really rock, so that's why you should come check us out. It's always good to have a little data behind it, but at the end of the day, also on the other side of the table, it's always going to be somewhat of a gut decision too. I mean, you could how many times have promotion executives at various record labels come into the program director with very compelling arguments, whether, well, this song is getting played in the market next door and it's getting phones and it's getting, X percent, favorability factor in the call out research, et cetera, et cetera. And the PD says, I don't care. I just don't hear it. I don't hear it from my station. It just, I know you have all that data. But so it's always going to be a mixture of the two.
So, Dan, the last question that I have for you on tonight's show is, where do you think big data will take the music industry in 2014?
It's a really interesting landscape right now. And as I said earlier, I do think there's a data literacy gap in our business. We're doing our best to try to fill that gap. We're trying to make our data as actionable and as contextual as possible so that, we can reduce the data to some key points that will help people make better decisions and, just generally speaking, to reduce the amount of data noise, if you will, out there. One of the interesting things about our business is that it's only getting more and more complex, right? So there used to be a very prescribed path in a way, whereas you'd sign to a label, they would try to get your song on the radio, you'd go on tour, you'd hope you get 3.5 stars in Rolling Stone. And then you move on, you make your next record, et cetera, et cetera. Now, with the advent of the web and social media and streaming services and different touring possibilities, there's so many different ways to go and so many different, possibilities that it's really become an extremely complex business if you think about it, much more complex than it used to be. And our argument is that, as the business becomes more and more complex, it calls for increasing levels of sophistication in how people that are working with artists are viewing consumer engagement and consumer behavior, right? So we hope, we feel we definitely have a part to play in that whole process. What I see in my conversations with people is that there is definitely an evolution going on in the way that people are seeing data and using data. In that, I think, for if you just want to say, the obvious, like Facebook and Twitter, for example, I think, maybe as recently as a year or two ago, there was much more of an emphasis on let's get as many fans as possible because then we've done our job, because then it'll just everything good will happen after we have 100,000 Facebook fans. I think that now those people have started digging in and seeing that, we're spending a lot of money on a lot of different things. One of the things we're spending a lot of money is pushing people towards Facebook. Do we know for sure that Facebook is really what's moving the needle for us? And or do we have any reason to believe that it would? So what are the best things that we should be doing? What are the smartest use of our money? Because we don't have a lot of money to spend. So, as far as your question about what do I see in 2014, I do see this new, there's an evolution in thinking, and there's a new crop of executives in the music industry that I think really get it and are starting to rise within the ranks and bring on more influence. And it's no longer, oh, yeah, that's our data guy. He tells us how many Facebook likes we have. It's really becoming much more of a strategic marketing operational position where, it's useful to have data to inform yourself of, really to understand who your customer is, what they're doing, where they are, and when they are, and then how do I match up everything I'm doing to squeeze the most efficiency as possible out of that?
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing your thoughts. If people want to look you up as well as Music Metric, where can they find you online?
Well, they are always they can always just shoot me an email to daniel@musicmetric.com. They can come to our website, and no question is too small, or we get a lot of really interesting questions from a lot of different sectors of our industry, including things like we talked earlier. I got an email the other day from a small venue owner who said, "Can I use your service to help make better talent purchasing decisions?" And the answer is yes. So we encourage that kind of communication. Like I said, we have a great business. We'll be making some exciting announcements at MeetEm about some very significant product news that we're making, and also some very interesting deals that we've made recently. So we have that to look forward to. So I feel like if the Iron Maiden story wasn't enough to get people interested in Music Metric, the news that we'll make next month at MeetEm definitely will be even greater.
That's all for this episode of The Upward Spiral. Thanks to Hypebot.com for helping to put this podcast out. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at upwardspiralpodcast@gmail.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at Upward Spiral Pod. And don't forget to subscribe in iTunes. And if you like the show, please rate us highly and submit a review. Thank you for listening.